Hello, everyone, and welcome to our weekly A Course in Miracles study group. This is Deidre, not Corinne. Corinne is off doing something special this evening, and I'm very happy to be covering for her. Thank you, for Corinne, for letting me do that. Tonight, what we're going to start off with, just to let everyone know, is we had a little bit of a technical difficulty last week at the end of the call, so I'm just going to reread a couple of the paragraphs that we ended with, just to refresh everyone, and that'll be in Chapter 14 of the Sparkle and Original Editions, and Chapter 17 of the FIP Editions, and then we'll be moving on to Chapter 15. But just before we read anything, I just like to take a moment and just center and give this whole entire evening to Spirit, just allowing us to be grateful in our hearts for this time that we get to spend each week going over this wonderful material and the blessings that come forward as a result of sharing these ideas. So as Corinne says every week, this holy instant we give to you, be you in charge, for we would follow you, knowing that your direction gives us peace. I just feel called to mention today's workbook lesson. It says, I bless the world because I bless myself. And that's how I feel about these study group sessions, is that we're blessing our one self when we come together and share these ideas. So it's such an honor and always so beautiful to be sharing with you all. Thank you. Okay, so.
Deidre, I'm sorry to interrupt, but can you say what it is for the FIP again? Because I actually wasn't here the last couple of weeks, so I'm not sure.
Oh, sure.
I'm not sure where we are at all.
Okay. Well, it's just the end of Chapter 17.
Whoa, you guys got through a lot in 2 weeks. End of 17. Do you have the section title by any chance?
I'm not sure if it's the same as the Sparkle, and let me just check here.
I'll tell you what the end of 17 for me reads, the conditions of peace.
I think it is that section,
okay.
And I think it is the last two paragraphs. But just be aware, because the Sparkle and the FIP are different editions, that there probably is going to be some differences as I'm reading.
Okay.
In the text. So, okay. Thank you for asking.
Thank you for answering.
Oh, be lost. That's really frustrating. So, if you want peace, you must abandon the teacher of attack. The teacher of peace will never abandon you. You can desert him, but he will never reciprocate, for his faith in you is his understanding. It is as firm as his faith in his Creator, and he knows that faith in his Creator must encompass faith in his creation. In the consistency lies his holiness, which he cannot abandon, for it is not his will to do so. With your perfection ever in his sight, he gives the gift of peace to everyone who perceives the need for peace and who would have it. Make way for peace and it will come, for understanding is in you. From it, peace must come. The power of God, from which they both arise, is yours, as surely as it is his. You think you know him, or you think you know him not only because alone it is impossible to know him, yet see the mighty works that he will do through you, and you must be be convinced you did them through him. It is impossible to deny the source of effects so powerful they could not be of you. Leave room for him and you will find yourself so filled with power that nothing will prevail against your peace. And this will be the test by which you recognize that you have understood. And I'll pause there for a moment just before we go on to chapter 15. So I love this first sentence of the paragraphs that we just read. If you want peace, you must abandon the teacher of attack. And that, I know in my own personal life experience, that has always been the truth. If I'm experiencing conflict in any form in my life, it means because there's conflict somewhere in my mind. And the Course is really, you know, blunt about that fact. It always comes back to what is in our mind. And I love this too. It's so comforting. The teacher of peace will never abandon you. You can desert him, but, you know, the teacher of peace will never abandon you. There's nothing on earth that we could do or think we might do that would make Holy Spirit, love, God, abandon us. So that, again, the separation that we think happened isn't possible. That's always so comforting to me.
Now, for me, okay, mm-hmm. with regard to, you know, making your way in the world, lately, and I don't know if it's my age, I find it so confusing. And it disrupts any sense of peace. You know, when you try to navigate the world, your family, your job, your career, you know, if you have a career, and handling conflict off and on, I find it very confusing. I don't know if that's oversimplifying life, if that's a simple view of life, but I find it lately very confusing that I guess I let it disturb me, and then any sense of peace just kind of goes away.
Do you have a specific example of something that's happened recently that maybe we could apply the idea?
Well, the biggest one, and it's just me, you know, my daughter finished college and then she moved away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was a wreck after that. I couldn't, and it's about a month ago now, but I had trouble like thinking straight, you know, and being upset. So the sense of peace was something that, oh, it's like Paula would always say, you know, more please.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So the Course, I think, focuses on that issue of probably clear thinking with regard to Spirit, you know, that he's always there.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm reaching for. And that's why these calls are oh so helpful.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. These calls are awesome.
Yeah.
And by Sunday night, I'm ready for them, you know.
Right.
I think what comes up for me and, you know, all our experience is one experience because we're all interconnected. But if I'm feeling lack of peace for any reason in any of my relationships, it means that I'm placing value in the world. And the world, as we know it, the Course is very clear, comes from the ego. The world is created by the ego. So all of these roles that we have, parent and child, you know, teacher and student, husband and wife, they're actually conceptual ideas. They're not the truth of us. Our spiritual self is eternal. So the lack of anything isn't possible. So the lack of a specific relationship isn't possible. So for me, it's always, if I feel triggered by something, like if something's coming up in my life where I'm feeling an upset, I'm very, very, willing to look at that with spirit now, realizing that what I'm seeing with my body's eyes in terms of form, like let's just give an example, say there's something going on between my mom and I, for example. The cause of the upset isn't whatever the form is, whatever's going on, like an argument or whatever it might be. It's a belief that I'm holding in my mind. So if I believe, for example, that my mom on the level of form is upset with me, that means I believe that I'm a body and that how my mom is reacting to me can affect my peace.
That's a really good example.
Yeah. So that's just one example of how we can choose to look at relationships and, you know, sort of what am I getting out of it? How am I allowing this specific relationship to define who I think I am at any given time? Does that
go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
This is Christina here. I was just thinking when a loved one moves away from us physically, it's a beautiful time to really join with them in spirit as well. You know, knowing that there cannot be a separation between us, regardless of whether we see the person there or not.
Right.
You know, we're constantly always joined up in love, and the love doesn't know anything about distance or space, time or anything. It doesn't even know that. So being able to get into a place where you're joining with your daughter inside your heart, you know, and maybe that even brings you closer to her than maybe if she actually is there sometimes.
That's right. That's good. Oh, thank you.
I can definitely attest to that because my earthly father is no longer here in body. He transitioned in the fall, but we're much closer now, believe it or not, than when he was here because I talk to him about everything. And so what we see as, you know, distance and everything in terms of the body really doesn't exist because you're eternal beings. We're not beings that are ruled by linear time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be talking about time in the next section, which I'm really excited about too. So does that make sense, Brian, or did you have anything?
Yes, cool. It does, especially related to time because it's somehow all as symptoms of the passage of time and getting older and really the one core issue, this one's crazy, is the fearing change, like being afraid of what's going to change next kind of thing, you know, but all related to time. So I'm all ears on time.
Yeah. Well, I think this next section is going to be really awesome for that.
Good.
So.
Great.
In the Sparkle edition, it's actually called The Purpose of Time. So how perfect is that? Okay. So can you imagine what it means to have no cares, no worries, no anxieties, but merely to be perfectly calm and quiet all the time? Yet this is what time is for, to learn. And so I'm hearing some background noise, like a buzzing. I'm wondering if someone could mute their lines, pressing *6 just for the recording purposes. Thanks. Thanks so much. Okay, so I'm going to just start that section over. The purpose of time. Can you imagine what it means to have no cares, no worries, no anxieties, but merely to be perfectly calm and quiet all the time. Can that, yet that is what time is for, to learn just that, nothing more, just that and nothing more. God's teacher cannot be satisfied with his teaching until it constitutes all your learning. He has not fulfilled his teaching function until you have become such a consistent learner that you learn only of him. When this has happened, you no longer need a teacher or time in which to learn. One source of perceived discouragement from which you suffer is your belief that it takes time, that the results of the Holy Spirit's teaching are far in the future. This is not so, for the Holy Spirit uses time in his own way, that it is not bound by it. And all the waste that time seems to bring with it is due but to your identification with the ego, which uses time to support its belief in destruction. The ego, like the Holy Spirit, uses time to convince you of the inevitability of the goal and end of teaching. To the ego, the goal is death, which is its end. But to the Holy Spirit, the goal is life, which has no end. And I'll pause there. And if anybody wants to comment again, you can unmute your line again by pressing star 6. Okay. So this is perfect, given what we were just discussing. So I love what it says in this paragraph that, you know, from Spirit's perspective, like we've been talking about, we're eternal beings and time has no end. The ego will use it, however, to try to convince us that this world is real, these bodies are real, and that we're going to perish and die. That's the whole purpose of the ego, is to get us to invest in this false belief that death is possible. Does anything come up for anybody that they'd like to add to these paragraphs that we just read?
Well, I love what you said about the ego trying to convince us that our bodies are real. And I think what's so fascinating about that is not only do I realize that my body isn't real, but your body and the body of Corinne and the body of everybody else, they're not real either.
Mm-hmm.
That's just really so amazing, because a lot of times we concentrate on the fact, well, you know, I'm eternal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm eternal. I'm not this body.
Right.
But to be able to look at it and also see that all the people that I see, they are not their body either.
Yeah, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but there's another quote in the Course that basically says, not for one instant does the body exist at all, at all. So
yes,
it's like,
right,
you know, what we think of as these bodies is just not our reality whatsoever.
Yes, that is just so amazing. So everything going on here is just the dream.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Everything. All of our problems, all of our joys, all of our sorrows, whether it's on the positive side or the negative side, it's still the dream. It doesn't matter if it's negative. It doesn't matter if it's positive. It's still the dream. It's the dream the ego is trying to convince us is true.
Not only that, but the more I practice with this work, and of course with my work as an intuitive healer, the more I trust Holy Spirit, I have these experiences where I notice that not only am I not a body, but all of this that we think we're experiencing now in linear time has already happened. And it's a really cool kind of trippy experience, but it's really just when you have those moments, you really realize that there is nothing to fear, that all of this has already been decided.
Right. Absolutely. I agree 100%. And actually, really also, there's nothing to forgive either, really.
Absolutely.
There's nothing here. I mean, if we want to stay in the illusion of the ego's illusion, then being in this world, then we have all this to forgive. But being that we're elsewhere, we're everywhere, and we're all just one thing, there's no forgiveness there because there's nobody to forgive.
Exactly.
All just one whatever. I can't tell you what. Spirit? I don't know what the word
is. One consciousness or one spirit or one, identity. One true identity. Yeah.
That's all I wanted to say.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing.
There's a sentence that really stood out to me, and I'm like, ha ha. So I was laughing because I was like, oh, man, like, this is totally written for a Westerner. Like, the sentence is like, one source of perceived discouragement from which you may suffer is your belief that this takes time and that the results of the Holy Spirit's teaching are far in the future. This is not so. And I kind of chuckled to myself because I remembered when I started doing this work a few years ago, and I've seen this happen to other people, where it's like people get so stressed that they're just not getting it. You know what I mean? Or they're not getting it fast enough. Or they're not seeing results, or like it all becomes very results oriented, right?
Yeah.
So there's a sentence here that's kind of like, chill out.
Yeah. I think I've been reading this book for 20 years, and it never gets old to me. You know, it's like visiting the freshness of the moment, and I think it just it deepens in yourself, you know, like you let it soak in and you let go of your goals and your ideals and you just let it be what it is. It's totally amazing.
I think what you said too, Amanda, is really key because what the text is saying, they're like, we tend to think, you know, like spiritual awakening is always somewhere in the future. But it's now. It's now. It's never. Now is all we have. Now is the only reality. So it's like the resurrection of Christ is a moment-to-moment choice within you. It's not something in the future. It's now. So I think that's really awesome.
Hey, Deidre.
Yeah.
This is Angela. How are you? I'm good. I really need to be here tonight. And I get what you're saying from the words I get, but I'm so, I would say so, I feel, and I felt this way before, but more lost than ever. And the reason I say is, you know, I question my faith, I question my Holy Spirit, I question it all. And my new sister, who, if we're going to talk in the world's terms and not of the course terms, she was diagnosed with ALS, has been here, and so she just went back, and it's everything that is going on is more tumultuous than ever. It's really, really, it just is. You know, I find myself repeating course. I find myself saying, okay, Holy Spirit, God, I really need your help. I turn all of this over to you, and I can just be really honest, and I'm not hearing, and I'm not, you know, and I'm having a very difficult time. And knowing how, I always ask this question because I don't know how the answer is. I don't know how to respond to the situation. I don't know how to respond to the other people. I feel like there's some action that I need to take, and I've been saying, a good friend of mine said that studies course said to me, you know, and I've been saying it, but I'm not hearing anything, and I'm trying to listen. What would you have me do? Where would you have me go? What would you have me say, and to whom? And my salvation comes from me alone.
Right.
So I just really need to throw that out there, because I don't know, but I there's part of me that says, I want this to stop. It's enough. And you know what? Doesn't look like it's going to get, you know. So I think when I'm right in the crux of whatever is going on, that is the hardest time to practice and to say, yes, this is true. This is true. This is a dream. You know,
right.
I just have to put it out there. So any words of encouragement, I will take it.
Well, thank you so much for sharing, Angela. It's, you know, awesome that you're just willing to say with complete honesty, this is where I'm at, and I'm feeling frustrated, and this is what's coming up for me. Because this isn't a course about denying our feelings and denying what's coming up. It's about being willing to look at whatever's coming up, and you're obviously doing that. So that's the first thing I want to say, is you are doing the work just by being willing to look at it. And I find, like, often we get frustrated with ourselves and we think, oh, I'm not hearing spirit, and I should be doing something. I should be doing something different than what I'm doing. And that, to me, in my work with myself and work with clients, is always a sign that no, there isn't something more you need to be doing except for being gentle with yourself. Because when we're in that, you know, pattern of beating ourselves up for thinking we should be doing more than we're doing, we're actually, you know, not able to hear because we're so busy thinking we should be doing something else. So I would just allow yourself to just be gentle, and it's okay not to know the answer right now. The answer will come when you're able to be quiet, and it'll just be effortless, and you'll know what to do. But I would just rest in God right now and just center in the fact that you're doing the absolute best you can with what you've got.
Okay. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
Can I make a suggestion? And I don't know if this would be a correct suggestion. So, Deidre, you can tell me if it is or not, because I'm very new at this myself.
Everything is perfect. If you feel called to speak, that's spirit. So.
Well, what I wanted to suggest, I wanted to ask, because I know what I found to be very helpful for me. I can only speak for what's been helpful for me. Is doing the lessons.
All right. And you know, it's so interesting. I had started the lessons, and then the craziness with everyone, the family all being here and Denise here, and the chaos and everything like that. And so I got away from it. But I can tell you the one thing I held on to, even though it just doesn't feel very comfortable, is meditating in the morning. So I get down, I meditate. I don't care if it's 5 minutes. I don't care if it's 15 minutes. I just do something. Now I've just been opening up the book to, okay, you know, where will you, you know, where should I open up the book to, opening it up at random? But I'm thinking, well, maybe I just need to go where I left off and go back to where I was.
But I think doing the lessons would be very helpful. Because I know they were helpful for me. So I'm only speaking for myself.
Yes.
So what you might want to do, you know, it's just a suggestion, is also start doing the lessons again. And I don't know if that's the right advice to give, Deidre. I'm not really 100% certain. Mm-hmm. So you could comment on that, because you're more with it than I am.
No, I'm not more with it than anyone. I'm simply co-facilitating this call. But everyone has equal wisdom to share, because we're all the same. So if you felt called to speak, what you said is what needed to be said.
Okay.
I actually feel called to say something to you. Again, I don't know if this is going to be helpful for you or not, but it's been helpful for me. is I've realized whenever I'm in a really, really, really stressful situation and I'm coming from the perspective of wanting to hear something so badly, right,
mm-hmm.
that's when it doesn't come.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I just kind of accept what's going on around me and I'm like, okay, I can control this, I can't control that, and I just kind of accept that, right, like this, I'm doing what I can do and that's it, that's when it comes.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. And for some reason, Angela, what's coming up for me, for you right now, is I don't understand what anything is for.
You know, it's so funny because I was trying to find out where you guys were at, and I was looking at the pages, and that is, you know, I'm thinking, okay, this is where you guys were reading from. And when I read the page, there it was, right there. So I don't, like I said, I didn't know where you were exactly, but it was right there. I don't know what anything is for. I don't know this thing I am, you know.
Right. Yeah.
I thank you. Also, I want to comment because I thought this was helpful. What I often forget, because I need to ask, Corinne would say this, is ask directly. I'm willing to share this with you, Holy Spirit. I'm not even sure. I'm not sure about Holy Spirit. I'm not sure about God. I'm not sure about anything, but I don't know what else to do. So I'm willing to share this. I'm willing to share this. Show me. Show me what this is for. Show me. And that is teach me, guide me. And I resonated with what was said, is to say, okay, you know what? At that point, it's like, you know what? God is not deaf. Holy Spirit's not deaf. It's like I'm belaboring it to say, okay, I'm in pain. Well, you know, stepping back and just, I need to say this thing for me is to just be in awareness to say, okay, I'm in awareness that I'm in pain. I think I'm in pain. I share this with you. But do the best I can and just say, okay, move on to something. You know, like today was a new day. And I said, I cannot do what I did yesterday, because yesterday I'm like, you know, why am I here? What am I doing? I don't want to be here. I just want to say, okay, you know what? I want to say enough already. It's just enough. And that's not helping either. So, but I begin to realize is the answers are really not out there. The answers are within, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to stop when I'm belaboring them, and I think I'm depressed and I can't move out. And but there is another thing that was said, and then I'll be okay. What I heard was, Adrienne, I heard you say, be gentle with yourself, and that you know, that also is just like, it's okay,
yeah.
Especially if you think, okay, this is all a dream, you know. You know, I there's so much of a need to get it right on one behalf. It's like having those two voices. One half is, oh, you've got to get it right, and the other half is relax. And yet, it's like, well, do you go into the fire or not? And and going into the fire is not the answer.
Well, what I'm reminded of while you're talking is what Corinne often says, is that you have to be where you're at. She says that a lot, and it's so true, because we can't be somewhere else when we're, you know, firmly located in, you know, another location. So you need to be exactly where you are for whatever purpose is being served. And once you, like Amanda said, are able to just say to Spirit, like, look, this is where I am, and I actually feel fear right now. I know for me, as soon as I get honest and I'm completely 100% authentic with Spirit, and I just say, look, I'm scared, or this is what's coming up for me, and I'm willing to sit in that space without changing it and without forcing anything to be different.
Yes, it's when you stop resisting it.
Yeah, it's the resistance.
That's what I've noticed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes there's things that are super difficult that's the place where it's like that catalyst. It's like that thing that we've been avoiding. And it comes up, and it's like the place where we just need to hold it. Just hold our being in this moment, and the moment, each moment as it comes up, and just be determined to stick with it, because it's like right on the cusp of coming out into a new place in yourself. It's almost, I almost always see that. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have felt that way. When it seems like it's just so hopeless and dark, you're like so close. You're just like right on the edge of really entering into yourself, your understanding.
I love the willingness for you guys to say, okay, you know, it's like to be willing to be in that spot, rather than to say, I want to run as fast as I can, as high as I can, away from all of this. And I'm just, you know, if you really want to talk honesty, that's how I feel. I do want to run.
But it is what it is, and that's okay.
Okay.
I think that's
just your
kind
honesty
of the whole point.
Just your honesty is what it is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I really, really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Are we feeling okay to move on to the next paragraph, or is there more that... Okay, perfect.
Yeah, thank you
so
much.
You're welcome. So the uses of time. The ego is an ally of time, but not a friend, for it is as mistrustful of death as it is of life, and what it wants for you, it cannot tolerate. The ego wants you dead, but not itself. The outcome of its strange religion must therefore be the conviction that it can pursue you beyond the grave, and out of its unwillingness for you to find peace, even in the death it wants for you, it offers you immortality in hell. It speaks to you of heaven, but assures you that heaven is not for you. How can the guilty hope for heaven? The belief in hell is inescapable to those who identify with the ego. Their nightmares and their fears are all associated with it. The ego teaches that hell is in the future, for this is what all its teaching is directed to. Hell is its goal, for although the ego aims at death and dissolution as an end, it does not believe it. The goal of death, which it craves for you, leaves it unsatisfied. No one who follows the ego teaching it without the fear of death. Yet if death were thought of merely as an end to pain, would it be feared? We have seen this strange paradox in the ego's thought system before, but never so clearly as here. For the ego must seem to keep fear from you, to keep your allegiance. Yet it must engender fear in order to maintain itself. Again, the ego tries and all too frequently succeeds in doing both by using dislocation for holding its contradictory aims together so that they seem to be reconciled. The ego teaches thus, death is the end as far as hope of heaven goes. Yet because you and itself cannot be separated, and because it cannot conceive of its own death, it will pursue you still, because guilt is eternal. Such is the ego's version of immortality, and it is the ego's version of time that, it is the ego's version of time support. And I'll pause there.
All right, Deidre, you're going to have to translate to me at least.
Okay. Well, for me, to sum this paragraph up in a really simple sentence, it means that time, when used as a device for the ego's thought system, means death is eternal. Death is, you know, strengthened by the use of time. When the Holy Spirit uses time, we are shown what we really are, that there are no limitations in the universe, that love is what we are, and that the impossible is possible, and that death isn't real. So I don't know if that answers your question, because it is a little bit of a heady paragraph.
It did, yeah.
Does anything else come up for anybody with what we read there? There's a lot in those two paragraphs.
I think the ego, as a construct, sees, it knows itself is limited. It's totally aware that what it is doesn't have any kind of eternal quality. And so it can't even go beyond itself. And so when we keep within that construct, we're limiting our own spirit, and we feel it. There's an example when we watched this movie, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, there's The Last Unicorn. The unicorn goes into a human body, and she said, "This body is dying all around me," she says. She becomes aware because before she was immortal. And I think we get into an awareness of ego in our body, and we feel the sense of time and end and death and loss and sin and all these other things that come with it. And it's for us to recognize it and see it what it is and then take a step beyond it and know that that isn't who we are.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all the qualities that come with, being in an ego consciousness.
Yeah, I thank you so much for sharing, Christine. I think what you said is amazing. What comes up for me, too, just hearing you speak, is that the ego really doesn't exist at all. The ego is simply a belief system. And we're at choice moment to moment, day by day, which belief system we're feeding. And when we're feeding that thought system of fear and death and sickness and everything that isn't love and joy and peace, we're strengthening that belief that death is possible. It's just constantly, being in check with what am I, where am I placing my belief right now? How do I feel? Constantly checking in and seeing what's coming up. Am I bringing forth witnesses of the false, or am I bringing forth witnesses of the true? That helps me in my life. Because the Course in Miracles says over and over that the ego is really nothing. That's a quote from the Course. The ego is really nothing. It's just that our belief in this false self is so strong, this belief that separation from God and love and light is so strong that we've made it real for ourselves in our mind. That's the separation. It's not this external thing called the ego. It's the belief in the ego.
Yeah, and for me, I don't know why, but the idea of, surrender is coming up for me because, we could get better at, choosing things on a moment-by-moment basis, and it's like a habit. It's like a muscle, and it gets easier with time, but there are still those moments where it's really hard, to do that, And for me, in those moments, I can either choose to fight it and resist it and try and control it and try to change it, which doesn't help at all. It just makes the whole situation worse, right? But if I cannot, actively choose to believe otherwise, I can at least choose to surrender. And then that surrender is what leads to me choosing otherwise eventually.
That is so beautiful what you just shared, because the things that you mentioned as resistance, change and, you know, fighting against something, wanting it to be different, you know, those are all false beliefs that just keep the ego thought system going. Like if I just change this, if I just fix this, or if I just control that, things will be different. And those are all the belief system of the false self.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, in like super simple terms, I guess, like if I feel like I cannot actively choose otherwise because I'm just not there yet, mm-hmm. you know, or I'm finding it very difficult to do so, the only thing that helps me is to just surrender, let it go, and accept it, right? And eventually, sooner rather than later, after I do that, then I can start seeing things differently.
Yeah, I think that is so awesome, because it brings up for me a chance to clarify that when we talk about choosing between love and fear, it's not us intellectually making a choice. It's handing it over to the spirit within us and letting spirit make the choice. So it's not that we necessarily know what the choice is going to be, because you're right, those moments come up in life where we have no idea what choice is best or which voice we're listening to. And in those moments, it's best to say, look, I have no idea. Take this and look upon it for me. Spirit, take this and look upon it with new spiritual vision for me.
I kind of see it as like giving up and just taking the fighting gloves off. Like that's the image I'm getting in my head.
Yeah.
Because that's what we want to do, is we want to fight, and the gloves come on, and like we want to change things. And like for me, when I envision like surrendering, it's just like taking the gloves off and putting your hands down, you know, and just being like, okay, I'll figure it out.
Yeah,
something
it's resting.
You know what I mean?
It's resting, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Resting. And that's what peace is. It's resting.
Yeah, and that part, I think it's the whole chapter, I need do nothing. There's nothing that I need to do.
Right.
That's so, there's so much in that. If I could just take that one phrase and really understand what that means. I mean, the whole world is about doing something.
Yeah.
And when the spirit comes in and I just don't do anything, then the spirit is the doer or the mover, not me. I'm just waiting. I'm just not doing anything.
You're right. It's the, you know, the body identity that thinks, or the world identity that thinks we need to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the source of conflict comes. And so
I think it's actually Deepak that came up while you were talking about like doing nothing and the body identification. Mm-hmm. I think I heard Deepak Chopra one time, someone asked him in an interview, they're like, you're all over the world. Like, don't you get exhausted? You're always on the plane. Like, you know, just going on and on and on. And he responded with, my body is busy, but I am not busy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, did you know that when you can lie in bed and be tired because you're thinking, you're mulling over your problems, and that's very exhausting. And
yeah.
You don't even have to be moving your body at all.
Yeah, and I think I need do nothing is so perfect, because we do get caught up in the dream, right? We get caught up in this idea of responsibilities and things that we need to do. And if we just let go and remember to rest in God, things become so much easier.
It's almost like they fall into your lap. Like
yeah.
The answer to your question or the solution to your problem, because, I mean, I've seen that happen in my business so many times, right, where it's like as soon as I let it go, literally within like no time, that's when the solution to whatever problem came up, literally falls into my lap. Like, I don't even go out looking for it.
Right. Beautiful. So again, the ego tries and all too frequently succeeds in doing both by using disassociation for holding its contradictory aims together so that they seem to be reconciled. The ego teaches that death is the end as far as hope of heaven goes. And I know I'm reading this over, but I think it's important. Yet because you and itself cannot be separate, and because it cannot conceive of its own death, it will pursue you still, because guilt is eternal. Such is the ego's version of immortality, and it's the ego's version of time support. The ego teaches that heaven is here and now, because the future is hell, even when it attacks so savagely that it tries to take the life of someone who hears it temporarily as the only voice it speaks of hell even to him. For it tells him hell is here and bids him leap from hell into oblivion, the only time the ego allows anyone to look upon with some amount of equanimity. Can somebody tell me what that word is?
Equanimity.
Equanimity, thank you, is the past. And even there, its only value is that it is no more. How blank and despairing is the ego's use of time, and how terrifying, for underneath its fanatical insistence that the past and the future are the same, as is hidden and far more insidious threat to peace. The ego does not advertise its final threat and would have its worshippers still believe that it can offer escape from it. But the belief in guilt must lead to belief in hell, and always does. And that's in caps in the Sparkle edition. I think that's really important. Guilt is the belief in hell and will never lead to anything else. The only way in which the ego allows the fear of hell to be experienced is to bring hell here, but always as a foretaste of the future. For no one who considers himself as deserving hell can believe the punishment will end in peace. The Holy Spirit teaches thus: there is no hell. Hell is only what the ego has made of the present. The belief in hell is what prevents you from understanding the present, because you are afraid of it. The Holy Spirit leads as steadily to heaven as the ego drives to hell. For the Holy Spirit, who knows only the present, uses it to undo the fear by which the ego would make the present useless. There is no escape from fear in the ego's use of time, for time, according to its teaching, is nothing but a teaching device for compounding guilt until it becomes all-encompassing and demands vengeance forever. And I'll pause there. So I've talked a lot tonight. Is there something that comes up or stands out for anybody in those few paragraphs?
I think for me, when you read that last one and it says, there's no escape from fear in the ego's use of time, for time according to its teaching is nothing but a teaching device for compounding guilt until it becomes an all-encompassing demanding vengeance forever. I just, for some reason, when that sentence was coming up, what you said earlier about being gentle with yourself, for some reason that popped into my head while you were reading that sentence.
Beautiful.
Because I think, I think sometimes we're really hard on ourselves, and that's the ego. You know, it's the ego being hard on us, and then, you know, us being hard on ourselves, and that's the vicious cycle, I guess. But to just always remember to be gentle with yourself, no matter what is happening.
Mm-hmm. I think what comes up for me, too, and thank you so much for sharing what you just did, is that these are two completely contradictory thought systems, the thought system of love versus the thought system of fear. So the two thought systems never meet. It's impossible for them to meet because it's just they're one is true and the other isn't. So they just never meet. And so what you said about being gentle, it's like, when you're being gentle with yourself, it's impossible to be judgmental.
Yes.
When you're being gentle with yourself, it's impossible to feel guilty.
Yes.
Right? So that to me is a powerful observation. Because when we're acting out of love, the other thought system doesn't exist.
Right.
And love.
And acting out of love includes ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that actually,
right.
Okay. That hints at self-compassion. And I know I've mentioned it on the call a couple of times. There's a website. It's the Self-Acceptance Project. And it really goes into that topic of self-compassion. So if you just search on it, the Self-Compassion Project. Oh, I'm sorry. Self-acceptance. I said it wrong. Sorry.
Oh, self-acceptance.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, self-acceptance. It's Tammy Simon who runs Sounds True. You know Sounds True? They produce the audio CDs, but, and it's free. It's free.
Beautiful.
You know what? You know what's interesting, though? Because actually, those two things really coincide. Self-compassion and self-acceptance.
Yeah.
They really are kind of like the same thing.
That's right.
Accepting yourself is having compassion for yourself. So it's interesting that, you know, you said the other word first. But I see the connection between them.
Yeah, and one of the psychologists talks about self-compassion. It's Kristen Neff. She goes into a lot of detail about self-compassion. And one of the main components is mindfulness. So you can get a real dose of self-acceptance. That's really it.
There's another one, Christina Rilo. And she wrote, what is the name of her book? But that's her thing, is whole, like, she focuses on women mostly, but, like, you know, so she has things called, like, inner mean girl reform and stuff like that. But her entire thing is all how we can kind of start to love and accept ourselves and show compassion for ourselves. So it's Christine Arilo.
Beautiful. I was also thinking if we accept ourselves and if we're compassionate with ourselves, we are able to love others perfectly, more perfectly, because until we do that, we cannot love anybody because
right.
we will not be in a state of extending anything.
Right.
I think one of the key things that comes up for me too is, like, if you think about what we attract in relationships and other things in our life experience while we're here in the dream, if we all have, you know, self-acceptance and self-love, there's no way that we can attract experiences that are in direct juxtaposition to that.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So. You know, like a lot of times guilt will come up about, you know, people feeling like they want to allow a relationship to fall away, like the roles to fall away that between people. And sometimes that's necessary, right? Like sometimes we can be loving of every, you know, experience, but it doesn't mean that we stay with that in our direct experience, if you know what I mean by that. So I don't know. That's
Can you explain that a bit more?
Explain it how?
Can you just give an example of that?
Okay. Well, let's say from a course perspective, we know that our self-love and our self-worth attracts our experiences. So if I am a person that has extremely low self-esteem and I don't think very highly of myself, and I don't believe that I'm worthy of love, and I don't believe that I'm a child of God, and I don't believe that I'm light, then chances are I'm going to attract a counter, like a relationship in the level of form that's going to potentially treat me the way that I believe I deserve to be treated. So there is no like abuser and abusee. There's one soul there for the purpose of our spiritual development. But if I'm loving myself and accepting of myself and believing that I'm worthy and believing that I am, you know, a goddess and I deserve a loving relationship that's built on equality and respect, that's what I'm going to attract.
But what I thought was interesting, I was referring to when you said you don't have to stay in that, in your direct experience. What did you mean by that?
Well, if, for example, like I was just talking to someone about this today, a friend was talking about how they felt guilty for allowing a relationship that is no longer working in terms of the role that she is willing to play in her life.
Okay.
So there's some guilt there over letting it go.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is that we don't need to feel guilt for
mm-hmm.
allowing ourselves to love ourselves and for letting what needs to fall away, fall away.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it absolutely does.
Okay. Because we only attract what is the perfect reflection of ourselves. So, you know, my friend will not have that experience anymore when she no longer feels guilty.
Okay, gotcha.
Do you know what I mean by that?
The reason why I asked that, time is up. I had a reason for asking that question, but it's past time now, so I guess I have to wait.
Well, you can ask your question. I don't mind.
Oh, okay. The reason why I asked is because, forgiving. If you're in a relationship that is not a relationship that is working for you, but in it someone has asked you to forgive them for what they've done, and you do then, and you give and you forgive, like it feels like real forgiveness because there's a lightness. You now feel a lightness when you think about that person, whereas before you didn't. So you feel you have really, truly forgiven them. But when you said you don't have to stay in that direct experience, is it possible that you can forgive, but you still don't necessarily really, you wouldn't necessarily want to hang out with that person? I mean,
yes.
You have no will for them anymore, because you did used to have grievances. You know, and we're not supposed to have grievances, but you did have a grievance, and the grievance is now gone. But does forgiveness put you, I guess this is, maybe it's the ego's form of forgiveness, because even though I have forgiven, I don't necessarily want to be in the company of that person. If that person showed up in my life, I would be gracious and happy to see them and whatever. But if someone asked me, do you want to go hang out with such and such, I would have to say, well, I'd rather not. So that was my question, because my ears perked up as soon as you said the thing about it doesn't have to continue in your direct experience. So my question is, just to sum it up, can you forgive something but still not necessarily want to continue a relationship with someone?
Yes. I believe that you can. I believe that forgiveness, we think in these bodies that it's our job to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
That's often a misconception. But what I'm talking about is when a relationship or something in the level of form,
mm-hmm.
you know, falls away,
mm-hmm.
or moves out of your experience, it doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean that there isn't forgiveness there. Like,
okay.
When the guilt
mm-hmm.
or whatever the trigger is in the relationship is no longer, like in the case of my friend,
mm-hmm.
when she no longer falls into the belief that she is guilty for doing this in the relationship,
mm-hmm.
the relationship, she won't use that relationship to make herself feel guilty.
Okay.
And the soul contract will be done.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean that, you know, what often happens is we make judgments on ourselves based
mm-hmm.
on the role that we play in relationships, and we use that to make ourselves feel guilty, and we use that to not love ourselves.
Mm,
does that
okay.
make sense?
Yes,
and what I'm talking about is something different. You're not
mm-hmm.
blaming the other person.
Right.
But you're simply saying, I'm giving this to spirit now,
mm-hmm.
and if the relationship comes back and there's still that guilt trigger there's still some inner work to be done.
Okay.
But it is actually okay to really let relationships on the level of form fall
mm-hmm.
away.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
thank
I
you.
Think this is interesting, because I think we have this misconception that if we forgive people, then we need to keep them around. Like,
yeah.
Oh, I forgive you, so I'm going to continue being
your
best.
That was my whole thing.
Huh?
You're exactly what was in my mind is exact. You're saying it exactly right. And Deidre, that explanation you gave was beautiful.
You're welcome. Yeah,
you can forgive and love someone from afar. It's cool. It's fine. You know what I mean?
I like that.
Yeah, we often think to be loving, we need to keep everyone in our experience, right?
Yeah,
and
there are plenty of people that I love and forgive, but I don't want to be anywhere near them.
Okay, all right, thank you. So I'm not odd. I'm not odd. Thank
like,
you
and
all
I, and I don't feel,
so much.
And I don't feel guilty for not being near them. I think maybe what you're experiencing is some guilt, because it's the turn the other cheek thing, right?
Yeah, it is. It is that.
And I saw something the other day. What was it? It was like a meme or something, and I always remember this when I'm in a situation like that. Because you know the WWJD thing, what would Jesus do, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
There was a meme of showing one of the famous paintings of, like, Jesus tearing down the temple, and it's
mm-hmm.
like, WWJD, well, Jesus cracked a whip and flipped some tables over, too. Like,
right, absolutely.
Like,
thank
even
you.
Jesus had boundaries.
Well, thank you so much. And I love that word, boundaries. I do. So
yeah.
In form, it's fine to have boundaries.
Yeah, Jesus forgave people all the time, but he had boundaries.
I love that. Thank you all so much. I appreciate that.
I think, too, it's if we're using the relationship in form to make ourselves feel guilty, that is a warning signal we're using that relationship, because I've been going through this recently with some family members and whatever, and I've really come to a place where I'm extremely grateful for every experience that I've had in that relationship, because I would not be here studying A Course in Miracles and being an intuitive healer if I had not had those experiences.
That's a beautiful point, because sometimes I feel that way too, that these experiences help deepen me.
But at the same time, and I've really worked with this a lot, so that's why I'm speaking on it, is I recognize that it's not my job to change anything about the dynamic of the role or the dynamic of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That is Spirit's job. And sometimes on the level of form, we're not on the Course in Miracles, like, I'm on the Course in Miracles path, but it's not my job to make other people around me be on that path.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a natural thing with the law of attraction, you know, this is my life now and this is what I'm doing, but it has zero to do with what some of my other family members are interested in or want to do with their life. So naturally there's a falling away that's happening. And I went through a whole cycle of guilt, you know, like, if I allow the relationship to fall away, you know, am I being loving and all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
I came to the realization that that was all my false self trying to make me feel guilty for staying in a role that is no longer where I'm at.
Excellent. So excellent. You guys have really answered
the
question so perfectly.
Yeah, I know. The one thing that has really, because I went through this too, right? And one thing that really helped me, and with me it was like with my best friend of like 10 years, right?
Wow. Yeah.
But
wow.
But the form totally changed, right? And it's okay. Things shift. I mean, I had found a new path and you know, I was not the same person anymore, right? And I don't want to, I'm trying to explain this in a way, because, like, at the end of the day, we're all equal, but everyone's at different stages of their journey. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's just...
And sometimes there are people who are just not going to go along for the ride, right? And you have to be okay with that. And there was something that I read... because I sometimes, in my business coaching, I sometimes have to help, like, my women clients with assertiveness, right? And I read something that said, you know, when you're being assertive, it means that you value everyone, including yourself, right?
I love that.
Yeah, so you value everyone, including yourself. So if you're making yourself feel guilty because in your head you're thinking, you know, I forgave this person, so I should have them in my life, even though I really don't want them here. I forgive you, but, you know, I can forgive you from afar, right? You're essentially being passive, right? So you're putting that person's needs above your own, right? When really you should be looking at people's needs equally. That's, like, the whole part of being assertive.
Lovely, lovely, wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Thank you. What's your name?
Amanda.
Hi, Amanda. Thank you. Adria, thank you so much.
Yeah, I'll just say one more thing and then we'll close. So the last thing I wanted to say is that what we're talking about here is different levels. We're talking only on the level of form.
Not on the level of spirit. I understand that. That's what I was having a problem with, on the level of form.
Yeah, because on the level of spirit, there's no separation whatsoever.
Right.
And,
there's,
like,
nothing to forgive.
Right, there's nothing to forgive.
And we're all just in harmony. Everything's in harmony.
On a deeper level, on a like a soul to soul contract level,
mm-hmm.
we've come into contact with everyone we meet, and every person that we have a relationship with is decided already. So
okay.
exactly how things play out is exactly what we've made agreements to accomplish.
Okay.
So even if it seems, you know, like on the level of form that a relationship is really messy and brings
well,
up a whole bunch of uncomfortable things, that's perfect because
okay.
that is what helps us to progress spiritually.
Right.
I
and
love
it's
it.
Also
I
it's
love
also
it.
What Corinne says of, you know, accepting where you're at. So if you don't feel like being near this person is very helpful to you, then why would you inflict that pain upon yourself? Because that's mm-hmm. not going to help the relationship no matter what form it's in.
Right. That's such a wonderful insight. And that's so true. That is so true.
And,
thank
you know,
you all.
Yeah, because relationships, you know, I know on the level of form, they can seem really tricky, but
mm-hmm.
there's a natural order in the universe, and anything that falls away is meant to.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's beautiful. Thank you all.
Thank you
all.
Guys. Have a great week.
Yes, have a lovely, lovely week, everyone.
Bye,
Brian.
Thank you.
Bye,
too.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye,
thank
you,
family.
Bye.
Nice.
Thanks, Carla.
Bye.
Great work.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. See you next Tuesday. See you next Sunday.
Okay. Yes.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks, Deidre.